Chapter 12. Attention. He waited patiently at the doors of offices, would vanish at tiffin time, would invariably turn up again in the evening, and then he kept his place till Ingerd went aboard for the night. The police peons on duty looked disdainfully at the phantom of Captain H.C. Jorgensen, Bark Wild Rose, wandering on the silent quay or standing still for hours at the edge of the somber roadstead speckled by the anchor lights of ships and adventurous soul longing to recross the waters of oblivion. The sampan men, sculling lazily homeward past the black hull of the brig at anchor, could hear far into the night the drawl of the New England voice escaping through the lifted panes of the cabin skylight. Snatches of nasal sentences floated in the stillness around the still craft. Yes, siree. Mexican war rifles good as new 6 in a case my people in Baltimore that's so. 120 rounds thrown in for each specimen marked to suit your requirements. Suppose musical instruments, this side up with care, how's that for your taste? No, no. Cash down my people in bolt shooting seagulls you say? Wow. It's a risky business, see here 10%. Discount it's out of my own pocket, as time wore on, and nothing happened, at least nothing that one could hear of. The excitement died out. Lingard's new attitude was accepted as only his way. There was nothing in it, maintained some. Others dissented. A good deal of curiosity, however, remained, and the faint rumor of something big being in preparation followed him into every harbor he went to, from Rangoon to Hong Kong. He felt nowhere so much at home as when his brig was anchored on the inner side of the great stretch of shoals. The center of his life had shifted about 400 miles from the Straits of Malacca to the shore of refuge, and when there he felt himself within the circle of another existence, governed by his impulse, nearer his desire. Hassam and Amada would come down to the coast and wait for him on the islet. He always left them with regret. At the end of the first stage in each trip, Jorgensen waited for him at the top of the boat stairs, and without a word, fell in two step at his elbow. They seldom exchanged three words in a day, but one evening about 6 months before Lingard's last trip, as they were crossing the short bridge over the canal, where native craft lie moored in clusters, Jorgensen lengthened his stride and came abreast. It was a moonlight night, and nothing stirred on earth, but the shadows of high clouds. Lingard took off his hat, and drew in a long sigh in the tepid breeze. Jorgensen spoke suddenly in a cautious tone, colon the new Rajatullah smokes opium, and is sometimes dangerous to speak to. There is a lot of discontent in Wajo amongst the big people. Good. Good. Whispered Lingard, excitedly, off his guard for once. Then, how the devil do you know anything about it? He asked. Jorgensen pointed at the mass of pros, coasting boats, and sampans that, jammed up together in the canal, lay covered with mats and flooded by the cold moonlight with here and there a dim lantern burning amongst the confusion of high sterns, spars, masts and lowered sails. There, he said, as they moved on, and their hatted and clothed shadows fell heavily on the queer-shaped vessels that carry the fortunes of brown men upon a shallow sea. Tea there. I can sit with them, I can talk to them, I can come and go as I like. They know me now it's time 35 years. Some of them give a plate of rice, and a bit of fish to the white man. That's all I get after 35 years given up to them. He was silent for a time. I was like you once, he added, and then laying his hand on Lingard's sleeve, murmured "Re you very deep in this thing? To the very last cent, said Lingard, quietly, and looking straight before him. The glitter of the roadstead went out, and the masts of anchored ships vanished in the invading shadow of a cloud. Drop it, whispered Jorgensen. I am in debt, said Lingard, slowly, and stood still. Drop it. Never dropped anything in my life. Drop it. By God, I won't, cried Lingard, stamping his foot. There was a pause. I was like you once, repeated Jorgensen. F5 and 30 years never dropped anything. And what you can do is only child's play to some jobs I have had on my hands. Understand that, great man as you are, Captain Lingard of the Lightning. You should have seen the wild rose, he added with a sudden break in his voice. Lingard leaned over the guardrail of the pier. Jorgensen came closer. I set fire to her with my own hands, he said in a vibrating tone and very low, as if making a monstrous confession. Poor devil, muttered Lingard, profoundly moved by the tragic enormity of the act. I suppose there was no way out? I wasn't going to let her out to pieces in some Dutch port, said Jorgensen, gloomily. Did you ever hear of Dawson? Something I don't remember now, muttered Lingard, who felt a chill down his back at the idea of his own vessel decaying slowly in some Dutch port. He died, didn't he? He asked, absently, while he wondered whether he would have the pluck to set fire to the brig on an emergency. Cut his throat on the beach below Fort Rotterdam, said Jorgensen. His gaunt figure wavered in the unsteady moonshine, as though made of mist. Why, yes. He broke some trade regulation or other, and talked big about law courts and legal trials to the lieutenant of the Comet. Certainly, apostrophe says the hound. Jurisdiction of Macassar, I will take your schooner there. Apostrophe then coming into the roads he tows her full tilt on a ledge of rocks on the north side smash. When she was half full of water he takes his hat off to Dawson. There's the shore, apostrophe says he go and get your legal trial, you Englishman. He lifted a long arm and shook his fist at the moon which dodged suddenly behind a cloud. All was lost. Poor Dawson walked the streets for months barefooted and in rags. Then one day he begged a knife from some charitable soul, went down to take a last look at the wreck, and, I don't interfere with the Dutch, interrupted Lingard, impatiently. I want Hassam to get back his own, and suppose the Dutch want the things just so, returned Jorgensen. Anyway, there is a devil in such work, drop it. Look here, said Lingard, I took these people off when they were in their last ditch. That means something. I ought not to have meddled, and it would have been all over in a few hours. I must have meant something when I interfered, whether I knew it or not. I meant it then, and did not know it. Very well. I mean it now, and do know it. When you save people from death you take a share in their life. That's how I look at it. Jorgensen shook his head. Foolishness, he cried, then asked softly in a voice that trembled with curiosity here, did you leave them? With Bellerub, breathed out Lingard. Why, you knew him in the old days. I knew him, I knew his father, burst out the other in an excited whisper. Whom did I not know? I knew Sentet when he was king of the south shore of Java, and the Dutch offered a price for his head enough to make any man's fortune. He slept twice on board the Wild Rose, when things had begun to go wrong with him. I knew him, I knew all his chiefs, the priests, the fighting men, the old regent who lost heart, and went over to the Dutch. I knew he stammered, as if the words could not come out, gave it up, and sighed. Ellerup's father escaped with me, he began again, quietly, and joined the Padres in Sumatra. He rose to be a great leader. Bellerup was a youth then. Those were the times. I ranged the coast and laughed at the cruisers. I saw every battle fought in the Batak country and I saw the Dutch run. I was at the taking of Singel and escaped. I was the white man who advised the chiefs of Maningkabo. There was a lot about me in the Dutch papers at the time. They said I was a Frenchman turned Mohammedan. He swore a great oath, and, reeling against the guardrail, panted, muttering curses on newspapers. Well, Bellerup has the job in hand, said Lingard, composedly. He is the chief man on the shore of refuge. There are others, of course. He has sent messages north and south. We must have men. All the devils unchained, said Jorgensen. Why, you have done it, and now look out. Nothing can go wrong as far as I can see, argued Lingard. They all know what's to be done. I've got them in hand. You don't think Bellerup unsafe? Do you? Haven't seen them for 15 years, but the whole thing's unsafe, growled Jorgensen. I tell you I fixed it, so that nothing can go wrong. It would be better if I had a white man over there to look after things generally. There is a good lot of stores, and Arms and Bellerb would bear watching no doubt. Are you in any want? He added, putting his hand in his pocket. No, there's plenty to eat in the house, answered Jorgensen, curtly. D-drop it, he burst out. It would be better for you to jump overboard at once. Look at me. I came out a boy of 18. I can speak English, I can speak Dutch, I can speak every cursed lingo of these islands. I remember things that would make your hair stand on end, but I have forgotten the language of my own country. I've traded, I fought, I never broke my word to white or native. And, look at me. If it hadn't been for the girl, I would have died in a ditch 10 years ago. Everything left me youth, money, strength, hope, the very sleep. But she stuck by the wreck. That says a lot for her, and something for you, said Lingard, cheerily. Jorgensen shook his head. That's the worst of all, he said with slow emphasis. T, that's the end. I came to them from the other side of the earth and they took me, and see what they made of me. What place do you belong to? Asked Lingard. Tromso, groaned out Jorgensen. I will never see snow again, he sobbed out, his face in his hands. Lingard looked at him in silence. Would you come with me? He said. As I told you, I am in want of a, I would see you damned first. Broke out the other, savagely. I am an old white loafer, but you don't get me to meddle in their infernal affairs. They have a devil of their own, the thing simply can't fail. I've calculated every move. I've guarded against everything. I am no fool. Yes, you are. Good night. Well, goodbye, said Lingard, calmly. He stepped into his boat, and Jorgensen walked up the jetty. Lingard, clearing the yoke lines, heard him call out from a distance. Drop it. I sail before sunrise, he shouted in answer, and went on board. When he came up from his cabin after an uneasy night, it was dark yet. A lank figure strolled across the deck. Here I am, said Jorgensen, huskily. D-die there, you're all one. But, if I die there, remember the girl must eat. Lingard was one of the few who had seen Jorgensen's girl. As he had a wrinkled brown face, a lot of tangled gray hair, a few black stumps of teeth, and had been married to him lately by an enterprising young missionary from Bukittinga. What her appearance might have been once when Jorgensen gave for her $300 and several brass guns, it was impossible to say. All that was left of her youth was a pair of eyes, undimmed and mournful, which, when she was alone, seemed to look stonily into the past of two lives. When Jorgensen was near, they followed his movements with anxious pertinacity. And now within the sarong thrown over the gray head they were dropping unseen tears, while Jorgensen's girl rocked herself to and fro, squatting alone in a corner of the dark hut. Don't you worry about that, said Lingard, grasping Jorgensen's hand. As she shall want for nothing. All I expect you to do is to look a little after Bellerup's morals when I am away. One more trip I must make, and then we shall be ready to go ahead. I've foreseen every single thing. Trust me. In this way, did the restless shade of Captain H.C. Jorgensen recross the water of oblivion, to step back into the life of men. For 2 years, Lingard, who had thrown himself body and soul into the great enterprise, had lived in the long intoxication of slowly preparing success. No thought of failure had crossed his mind, and no price appeared too heavy to pay for such a magnificent achievement. It was nothing less than bringing Assam triumphantly back to that country seen once at night under the low clouds and in the incessant tumult of thunder. When at the conclusion of some long talk with Assam, who for the 20th time perhaps had related the story of his wrongs and his struggle, he lifted his big arm and shaking his fist above his head, shouted, "Colon, we will stir them up." We will wake up the country. He was, without knowing it in the least, making a complete confession of the idealism hidden under the simplicity of his strength. He would wake up the country. That was the fundamental and unconscious emotion on which were engrafted his need of action, the primitive sense of what was due to justice, to gratitude, to friendship, the sentimental pity for the hard lot of Imada poor child, the proud conviction that of all the men in the world, in his world, he alone had the means and the pluck to lift up the big end of such an adventure. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.